New ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Joe Fold, founder of the Campaign Workshop, a Democratic political consulting firm based in Washington, D.C. Known for his creativity and commitment to the causes and campaigns he works on, Joe has produced award-winning direct mail, digital, and creative strategies for a long list of clients, groups, candidates, and ballot measures. Prior to becoming a Democratic political consultant, Joe served as the Northeast political director at the Democratic National Committee. Joe, thank you so much for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
What would you say is the most important thing that PR professionals need to know about the state of advocacy today?
That advocacy allows groups and organizations, especially if you're a PR professional that's doing nonprofit work, it allows groups and organizations to build capacity in a way like never before. I think that advocacy used to be seen sometimes by organizations as a burden, and now I really think that it's an opportunity to get members and folks who've never heard about your organization before to engage and be a part of a movement.
Right. So in what ways would you say marketing campaigns for brands like consumer products or even entertainment brands are similar to the type of advocacy that you do for social or political issues?
Well, we see now a lot of marketing brands taking the lead from advocacy to either use corporate and social responsibility in their message and in their brand, to use storytelling techniques that really come out of advocacy of individuals telling, being advocates and engaging around an issue in an emotional way. All of that really comes out of advocacy and organizing. And we now see large brands taking that from advocacy campaigns and using it in their brand marketing.
Is it always going to feel sincere? Obviously, there's a big storytelling is a word you can't turn around in marketing and entertainment of any sort without people talking about their storytellers. But what would you say is the unique advocacy spin? Because I think you're right in that it's sort of people are trying to hit that authenticity, but how do you guys tease it out? What are some of the tactics, I guess, when you're starting a project to help you find that unique, authentic thread?
Well, I think for advocacy, it's a lot easier to have a unique, authentic thread for an issue that affects someone's life than a brand.
You think?
Right? Yeah. So if you're talking about issues like clean water, like health issues, all of those things are really life and death issues to people, and it's much more direct than a brand's marketing campaign. Now, what brands are doing is saying, oh, well, we can be a part of this conversation. We can be a part of this dialogue because we do recycling around our brand, or we replant trees. So they're getting people then to engage, and in a way that people might not think of a brand in this way, they then are like, they take a twist on it and say, hey, here's how we're sincere about that. And that can be really well. It's much more direct when you're doing direct advocacy. There's no like pivot to do that. I think brands are now pivoting to do that.
Would you say, is there any risk to true advocacy of the, you know, sort of direct advocacy that you're doing, that the noise that's created by brands will make it difficult for your straight message? Have you noticed anything that's just made it a little crowded and that people might be, oh yeah, yeah, brands are always saying this, and you're like, no, we're really saying it. I mean, is there anything around that that's changed in your experience?
I mean, I think for sure. I think imitation is the greatest form of flattery.
It totally is, yes.
So I think that brands are doing it because they see it working and they see that emotional engagement. I think the hard part that we're seeing across the board, whether it's a brand or whether it's a nonprofit group, is you wind up having what I would call an engagement gap. And that you have people that start by engaging in something and then they fall off. So I think that the more and more storytellers are out there, the more people are using these techniques, it makes follow-up that much more important. It makes the ongoing engagement that much more important. And so it becomes, I think, hard for these advocacy groups and organizations to keep up, right? And they have to do even more now that once someone is engaged the first time, to create sort of an engagement funnel and keep them, potential advocates, moving through that.
Right. It's just sort of, oh, it never ends. What do you think commercial advertisers then can learn from politics? Slightly different from advocacy, but politics.
So in my business, right, I do both political campaign work and advocacy campaign work. You know, there are things that I think brands, commercial advertisers can learn from politics as far as sort of quick turnaround message. I think these are things that they actually started doing, like responding to a crisis, engaging with people in a pretty fast and focused way. Those are things that I think brands have learned and are learning even more from politics, because I think a lot of that comes from that.
That's true. What do you think, I mean, the flip side, what do you wish political marketers should learn from commercial advertising?
I think that commercial marketers, brands have learned long ago that they need to have ongoing campaigns that are not 3 months or 1 month or weeks. And commercial campaigns go on for years. I think what we're learning in both the political and the advocacy space is our campaigns don't stop at 1 month or 2 months or 3 months. They're now multi-year campaigns. And so matching content that is both paid content and organic content that is going on for years, and thinking about keywords and what people are organically searching for that brands and organizations on the commercial side have been doing for a long time, is something that political campaigns and advocacy campaigns are just starting to think about.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things that we've discovered in our study of entertainment brands is that brands have found brand awareness is significantly related to social, especially Facebook. But one of the biggest challenges is the algorithms aren't in our control. How do you, when dealing with awareness of, you know, that sort of very beginning of the funnel, right? And then the engagement that you're keeping up, how do you approach that social challenge? I mean, is your organic reach throttled the way our entertainment brands are throttled, or is it a little bit more open? Do you know how much organic reach issues get?
I think it's a little bit more open, but I don't know that that every advocacy and political campaign is attuned to the tactics that they should be, right? So like, we definitely see some elected officials that have really taken advantage of Facebook Live and have used live video as a way to engage. I don't know that everyone is doing it, and it's something that it should be growing more and more. I think that organizations have the like potential audience that in some respects is more engaged than some smaller brands. And so, you know, when you're looking at big healthcare organizations like an AARP or heart, lung, cancer, or large, you know, healthcare organizations, they have big audiences and have the ability to reach folks that maybe smaller brands don't. So that potential of having individuals that care about an issue and are willing to talk about it and engage in it can be a real helpful thing for advocacy organizations. It's not always the case for a entertainment brand or just a commercial brand to have customers that love their product so much that they're talking about it all the time. Like the organizations we work for, a lot of times these are life and death issues that people are dealing with around these issues, and they're very passionate about it. So that helps, and that helps expand the brand.
Right. When you're setting up a project with a client, how much are you training up the client's team to handle this stuff in-house, and how much are you completely sort of the full service agency for them, or does it vary by client and engagement?
It varies by client and the resources that the client has. I mean, there are large organizations that we are doing one piece of the work, right? And there are small organizations where we're doing a lot of the work. And some of this is state-based work, and some of it's nationally-based work, and some of it's internationally-based work. So it really depends on the goals of the client. I think one of the conversations that we're in with clients a lot, and we see this as something that is really important, is thinking of strategy first and tactics second. I think sometimes groups and organizations, and I think this is prevalent on the commercial side, people will start with the tactics, which is really a mistake, where we really need folks to start with the strategy. And then we figure out what resources the client has to implement the strategy on their own. What help do they need? How are we a part of that?
Right, right. A lot of articles these days say that young millennials and Gen Zs are interested in issues, and that really is what motivates them to participate. And this is one of the reasons why we see the brands really jumping on that trend. Have you found an uptick in involvement in that population? Are you finding that in some ways you're having an easier inroad into that group of people?
I mean, yes and no. Right. I think yes, as far as there's definitely inroads to those groups of people on sort of the instant action side, right? Like signing a petition, you can find a younger person that is engaged in that way. I think it becomes harder then to then move them from an online action to an offline action.
Ah, yes. And, right. and really to make it a concrete action.
That's correct. And so again, going back to this idea of sort of an engagement or advocacy funnel, right? You can start at the top of that funnel, have it be like someone signs an online petition. But then how do you move that to like meeting with a lawmaker or writing a donation, giving some sort of an online donation or writing a check to an organization? Moving through that engagement funnel becomes harder.
Right. In an article in Adweek, you talked about the importance of tactics. Now, you had mentioned just earlier, you know, that you need to talk about strategy first. But what are, once you've got your strategy, are there particular tactics which you think have wonderful bang for the buck?
Well, you know, digital tactics to me are much more scalable than some traditional media tactics. And so, again, depending on what you're looking to do for the client, I think that the idea of using a digital tactic, whether that's for list acquisition or for engagement, can work very, very well and can be really cost effective for clients. And we can measure it a lot more than some old school traditional tactics. But that being said, right, we're also finding that because people are hyper aware right now of what's going on in their country and in their local government and are engaged more about issues than they ever have before, we're seeing an uptick in engagement using traditional methods like direct mail, where we're getting higher and higher response rates because these might not be people who are right engaging digitally, but they're engaged.
That's really interesting because it's sort of, you almost think of it as being the most old school, the direct mail.
Right.
But you do have a super engaged, I don't think I've ever, I can't remember a time when such a large swath of the population is actively engaged on a daily basis with issues, at least at that level that you were talking about, where it's assigning a petition an easy engagement, I guess.
Yeah. And I think the question really is, how do you make these engagement, these problems relevant to people's lives? How do you do that in an emotional, compelling way? We still have to do that. And I think the more that, you know, we can do that, whether that's digitally or whether that's in direct mail or television or a canvasser at a door, right, the more that we can make that pitch be compelling, the more you're going to get greater and greater engagement. And just think, people are attuned to it now, so they're engaged at higher rates than they certainly would be at this time of year in the past.
Right. How come you chose politics and advocacy rather than, I mean, it's all of the things you're doing right now have such resonance with brands, and it seems like it would be such an easy sell to take all of that political experience and just pivot it into the corporate money pot. How come you're staying in your political space? Why politics?
I want to be clear that I think there are some really good and compelling brands out there that do good work, and we would not work for those brands. I think that we are really careful that we've developed an expertise in this space, in this political and advocacy space. And it's just one of those things for us that we have kept doing what we're good at, and we got better at that. And that's really been the focus, is issues and political movements and organizations. And I'm really lucky in that I fell into this years ago and managing political campaigns and then got into doing more and more issue work. And I'm lucky that I found something that I really love to do.
One of the things that certainly, you know, you think in popular entertainment is that campaigns can get pretty ugly. How do you stay above that ugly? How do you keep it so that you're not just ground down by the end and just, you know, wiped out at the end of a campaign? Then you either have won or you've lost, but goodness, you're exhausted. So how does that transition from the campaign to after the campaign, how does that work?
Well, I mean, because I run an agency, I have lots of different projects that we're doing. So we have political campaigns we're working on. We have advocacy campaigns we're working on. We have accountability campaigns we're working on. So it's all a lot of different things. So I've moved away from running one singular campaign. So I don't live and breathe sort of the life of a candidate, which I think is very hard. So we're able to work and take a step back from all these things. But what I'll also say is I think we do believe that we're on the right side of the fights that we're on. And we really work hard to take on organizations and issues that we care about and engage with folks that we, you know, we care about. I mean, and there are a lot of discussions here within the firm of what are the right things to take on and what are not. We talk about that and then we really move forward. But I think it is being committed to the work that you want to do.
You mentioned accountability campaigns. What is an accountability campaign and how is that different from an advocacy campaign?
So an advocacy, I mean, and it's just a different phase of sort of advocacy. It might sound similar to you when I explain but basically, let me try and do it. So advocacy, right, would be, you know, hey, we need to pass this piece of legislation, right? And you're letting people in a community know that you need to pass this piece of legislation. Accountability is legislator X voted this way on this piece of legislation. Thank him, or legislator X voted this way on this piece of legislation. Tell him that
punish him.
He is wrong, right?
Yeah.
You got it.
Right.
So that would be accountability.
I see.
That
okay.
Can be positive and negative.
Right, right. What would you say is then the difference? I guess you've sort of answered this a bit, but I want to tease it out from running political campaigns to running this agency. I mean, is the largest difference that you're not just steeped in one campaign? What would you say are the differences?
I mean, the largest difference is, you know, that I will be able to go home tonight and see my kids. And that's like one difference, right? Because I think running political campaigns is really hard. When this show airs, it'll be my birthday the next day, right? I'll be 50. And I think that I wouldn't have survived being on the road at 50, running around the country working on political campaigns. And there are friends of mine that I started with that are still doing that. And God bless
them. They look 100, right?
I mean, I would have to be...
You will be blind to answer. That's okay. Right. These are your friends.
I'm very disciplined to be a type of person that can stay and do that, right?
Right.
And so for me, what I like is having the ability to work on lots of different projects. An agency allows me to do that. And also, I like the creative side. And so we're really thinking of strategy and then how does that apply to creative in a campaign? You're not singularly focused on ads and campaigns and how that works. You're thinking about the mechanics of campaigns. We are thinking a lot about how the message translates. And so that's the difference on what we're doing here versus running a political campaign.
One of the big shifts that we've seen in entertainment and consumer product marketing is the importance of data. And I think that it probably came into play a little earlier in the political world than it did in the advertising and marketing world. How does data play into what you do in terms of shaping, well, everything really?
Yeah. I mean, we're primarily a targeted communications company. And so data is the back end of everything that we do. And on the political campaign side and on the advocacy side, we're able to use pretty large databases, whether that is member databases or voter databases, to target our audience in a very compelling way to engage them around issues. We're able to use voter models as well as issue models that are built around whether people support an issue or against an issue. And we're really able to dig in through programmatic advertising to target people down to the individual, right? And figure out who is with us and who, you know, is against us around issues.
How does that work in terms of being anonymized, I guess?
So, I mean, it is anonymized, right? I mean, we're targeting more segments of folks than individuals in some cases. But when you're linked to a voter file, right, you're really getting as close as you can down to that individual level while dealing with privacy policies. But again, you're able to IP target voters, so target down to the household level to really engage people.
Right, right. Now, in this last presidential election, I read some articles around sort of Cambridge Analytica. Now, do they have sort of a special database that nobody else has, or is it just, are they just one firm who happens to have been engaged?
I would say they're one firm that happens to be engaged, and there are different databases out there that are very similar to what Cambridge Analytica has.
So are these databases things that anybody can access, so that they're sort of public, it's third party information that they've just tapped into, and anybody, be it a brand or a political party or a advocacy, they're out there.
They're out there. The data is out there. You can't use voter data for commercial purposes. So there are state laws against that. But on the advocacy and political side, right, we're able to use voter files as the basis for the work that we're doing. And that allows us to really engage with folks in a very compelling focused way.
Now here, and this is probably a stupid question, but I'm going to ask it because I'm sure I'm not the only one thinking it. Voter files. You don't have individual voting choices.
No. So we wouldn't have individual voting choices, but what we would have is people live in a certain area. They have voted in primaries. And then we can take commercial data and match that to a voter file.
Oh, so you can see like these people have this kind of TV. This is that sort of purchasing data, that kind
of
stuff.
Purchasing data. They drive this kind of car. They have this type of income level. They care about these types of issues. They've donated to these types of causes in the past, right? All of that information will allow us to get a pretty clear picture of where someone stands around issues.
Oh, wow. How much, I mean, so that's, you do all that crunching internal in your organization. So that's
so,
all.
I mean, we have a lot of partners that we work with. I mean, we're a 12-person firm, so we're not massive, but we definitely have the expertise to work with that data. And we have a lot of data partners that we work with, as well as publishers that we work with to sift through the information to get what we need.
Right. Your website is filled with infographics and white papers and all of these really super great tools. Aren't you giving away an awful lot? I mean, what?
here's my view of this.
Okay.
It's a great question. When we started writing about politics, and this was 5 years ago, I had competitors call me and say, why are you giving away our secrets?
Yeah. I'm like, this stuff is great.
Right. My view, first of all, is there's no secrets. I don't think there's secrets in politics. I think there's good implementers and bad implementers. And I feel, and I've always felt like if I'm able to put out good information, that I'm going to help people run better campaigns. And then if they know me as the expert, that when they have a challenge that they can't take on themselves, that they're going to pick up the phone and call me. And that's worked really well for me. I mean, there's a lot of books out there like Utility and others that just talk about the idea of sort of being useful to the world and having people come back to you. And that has really worked for me.
Right, right. Well, that's good.
And I think in general, there is a philosophy I have of putting out good into the world and you get that back tenfold. So.
Right. Well, I like that philosophy and it's great stuff. So everybody should absolutely check out the website. What would you say is the favorite part of what you do?
Oh, I mean, the favorite part of what I do is I really like the strategy and the creative. I love working on issues that people might not have heard about or might not be focused on and get folks to take an action or engage or be able to move a candidate who isn't supposed to win to get them to win with the help of the candidate working as a full team. I mean, we have this belief that we're not doing these things ourselves. Everything we do is a team effort. And I really like being a part of these different teams with folks that I get to work with every day.
Great. So awesome. Now we've reached sort of the fun part of the interview where I toss some words your way and you give me your top of mind response. So no thinking, just one word. Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
It's always really interesting to see the variation and among people. And I think it'll be especially interesting because you're very unique among the guests that we have had. So first word is Facebook.
Targeting.
Google.
Organic.
Snapchat.
Millennial.
Twitter.
Donald Trump.
YouTube.
Video engagement.
Art.
Oh, wow. So many art things. My mother is an artist, so that's the immediate thing that comes to my mind.
Oh, okay. So mom.
Right, mom. But I love art. So lots of, great.
VR.
More questions, right? How is that going to interact with canvassing and things like that? That's what I think about. How is it going to work with politics when I think of virtual reality?
Right, right. And AR, sort of the related question.
Interesting, right? Like augmented reality. That's not a word, right?
But it's a good, sound.
Again, how does it engage for the long term? Engagement.
Right, right. And the last one, AI.
You know, what I think about that is like, how is the world going to change, right? AI is going to change so many things. When I think of AI, I think of change.
Right, right. Okay, so what are you most excited about on the horizon coming down the pike?
Well, you've just brought up all these incredible things. Like, I'm going to have to think about like how AI is going to change my world, which it is. I'm excited about what's going to happen in the elections next year. I'm excited on it'll be interesting. I mean, my excitement and concern is how do we create a political dialogue for good, right? How do we get people sort of past a negative discourse and get them to talk to each other? I think that's something we're really working with our clients. I think it's something that's really important. And my hope is that we can do work short and long term that benefits the conversation and gets people actually to have one.
Right. One of the things that somebody had mentioned was that nobody ever resolves arguments on social, that they create arguments, but they don't actually resolve them. And that it's really important for people to get off social and get in person. Is that one of the things that you find that you are tasked with? And is that really kind of what you were talking about in terms of that next level, the funnel of engagement?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, what you'll see in the political world is there's a lot of moving and testing around. All right, how do we get to those longer conversations? There's definitely some work that's been done around long form canvassing that we've written on our site where people are doing much longer conversations with folks at the door that are 10 to 15 minute conversations, which takes a longer time on issues, which takes time and resources to do. But I do think that technology is good for some things, but it's not really great for emotional in-person conversations.
Right, right. I would agree with you there for sure. Well, thank you so much. You wouldn't believe it, but we've run through our time. So it's been really fun. And I think, please tell everybody where they can find you. We will have notes. But
yeah, so I'm at www.thecampaignworkshop.com, right? And I'm on Twitter at Joe Fold or at the Campaign Workshop, right? Well, you can find me, but best way is the website for sure. But I'm also on LinkedIn and on every social channel, mostly that you can think of.
I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who have helped bring the program to life. First, my friend, Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open. And of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media, and a big thank you to our guest, Joe Fold. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.